and some servant in our image. So what is this position for Hazrat Zahra, for Hazrat Zainab? Mm-hmm. So this is not the image of Islam. We should consider other verses, the related hadith, and the patterns, practical patterns, their lives, Prophet and Imam. Then we can understand what is their real image of a woman in Islam.
We are living in the holy city of Qom. And every day, for our dear listeners who are not familiar, so many men go and pay visit to a lady. I mean, this is really outstanding that how many men, not simple men, many of scholars, ulama, okay, and maraje go and pay visit to a lady.
And all those scholars came here because of the tomb of that lady.
Because of the tomb of that lady, okay? I mean, even she was not old when she passed away.
She was single.
She was single, a young lady, but respected very much by so many of the scholars during the history of the Shia Islam. So this is the role and the place and the position of women in Islam. And as you said, a subordinate woman cannot act like Zainab al-Kubra in the court of Yazid, okay? So that was not the picture and the image of a lady in Islam.
Can I just recite a hadith?
Very good.
You know, we have a hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen. He said, "Al-mar'atu rayhana laysat biqahramana." The woman is a flower.
Mm-hmm. Like a flower.
He is not the agent. Qahramana here means agent, worker.
Mm-hmm.
It means that you, the man, you are a manager. But what does it mean? It means that you should do all the hard works out of the house and inside the house.
All right.
You shouldn't behave with your woman like an agent, like a worker. So this is Islam.
All right.
Why don't we consider this kind of hadith beside that verse in order to understand what is the meaning of that verse?
Such a soft, beautiful look at the women and the respect that the men have for the ladies in Islam. Thank you. Thank you very much, Sheikh Fadai, Sheikh Ahmad Danish, for a nice elaboration, the continuation of our discussion regarding Ayah 34 of Surah An-Nisa and the meaning of the guardianship or the men being maintainers and protectors of women. It was very kind of you.
Thank you.
And thank you very much to the listeners for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. Please, for more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
Hands toward the sky, and the dark night lights up as you praise God. Your tears rain on your hijab and this cold air is filled with the fragrance of jasmine flowers. Come and walk again in our troubled streets and lanes, and heal the scars of our city with your sense of heaven. Oh, Father. Your door, and you give him your necklace and the only food in your home. You talk to God until the rising of the sun, and you forget yourself while praying.
Welcome to Women of Resistance. Fadwa Ali Suleiman al-Masri lost her husband and son in an explosion by the Zionist entity at a shelter they had been directed the family to move to after forcing them to evacuate their home. Another explosion later on took her other son's limbs. Fadwa says the reaction on the Western world towards their plight is stronger than their Muslim neighbors. No major marches, no condemnations. She implores Western activists to end the pain by making a Palestinian state possible.
Gaza is the siren that forever calls you home. As the beating heart of Palestine, you can leave, but it beckons you back. The specter of Israeli occupation was never far. Fadwa lived with the constant trials and tribulations of what it truly meant to be part of an oppressed society. Like most Palestinians, no barrier was too much to stop the pursuit of knowledge. The soul of Gaza cries out with the injustice meted out to its people, its very soil saturated with tears, blood, and the bodies of the fallen. Fadwa recounts her own experiences of life during this genocide in all its visceral ugliness. Fadwa has one burning mission, to try and get specialist help for her now disabled son. For Fadwa, life now renders the past perhaps a rosier one. It's hard not to linger for what was when the present is a soul-sapping descent into the Israeli-fueled abyss. Fadwa speaks for Palestinians when she says the idea that Gaza will be simply given over to foreign powers is a non-starter. This new Nakba has been brutal, but Palestinians have a secret weapon, one that has lifted, fortified, and replenished Palestinian society in some of its darkest moments. In the midst of her own personal battles and fight for survival, Fadwa still spares a moment to assist those who are even worse off in true Palestinian spirit. Fadwa's mixed reaction to Western action on Palestine raises some important questions. The disgust at Israeli action has not been mirrored by firm action, especially from sections of the West that loudly advocate for equality. Fadwa knows temporary fixes will not solve the Palestinian question. The solution has to be bold and brave. Without full cooperation and commitment from the international community, it will be again left to the Palestinians to shoulder their burden alone.
Joining me in the studio today to discuss Fadwa's story is Sarah Carraway of the Women of Color in the Global Women's Strike. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
Sarah, you know, we've just seen the story of Fadwa. Have you ever seen women as strong, as resilient as Fadwa, for example?
Well, first of all, I wanted to just say our hearts go out to Fadwa and all the mothers in Palestine. We're absolutely devastated by what's unfolding on our television screens. It's just, it's horrifying. It's infuriating because world leaders are complicit with it. And Israel could not do what it's doing without many world leaders and world governments backing them in a policy of genocide. So we always think of the mothers and children. We know that something like 67% of those killed have been women and girls, and that mothers are starving. Newborns can't breastfeed because the mothers don't have food, water, health care. So this is an absolute urgent situation, and we know that Fadwa represents tens of thousands of other mothers, not only in Palestine, but in places like Sudan, Haiti, Congo. There are many slow genocides going on, and at this moment, Gaza is urgent because of it's just horrifying, and we have to do all we can to stop it. That's our message to the Palestinians. We're taking all the action we can. Millions around the world are with you, and our hearts go out to the mothers.
Truth is, Sarah, that, you know, Gaza has been an emergency for the past almost 2 years now. And to think that, you know, nothing has been able to stop this atrocity going on, when it comes to the bottom of it, it is the issue of racism, isn't it? I mean, you come from the Organization of Women of Color. If these were white women, we wouldn't be seeing this happening even for a month. Is that not the reality?
It's true. We're dealing with an apartheid regime. We're dealing with, this is the urgent anti-racist movement of our times. And as people of color, as women of color, we have a particular role to be speaking out, to be acting for Palestine. Our sisters, you know, the Palestinians are our people. You know, the children are our children. And we feel that deeply as women of color. But I think all humanity is standing with the Palestinian people. It's just the governments and the leaders are on the other side, and that is the problem we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, when we talk about white women, they also oppose racism, many of them. Yes. But just the mindset of the whole imperialist colonial mindset was really always to oppress people of color. But let's move on to the issue of the Palestinian state. You know, Fadwa says a lot of their problems will be solved if there is a recognition of Palestinian state. Now, that is also something controversial because many people believe that's just not enough. What are your views? What do you think about that?
Well, we think it's up to Palestinian people. The Palestinians will say what they want to happen. At this moment, our role is to fight for an immediate ceasefire, to stop the war, to stop the starvation and genocide, and to call out Israel's crimes. You know, these are war crimes. These are crimes against humanity. And we need world governments to act against Israel to stop what they're doing. That's our role at this moment. But in the end, the Palestinians will decide what they want to happen. But we have to stand with them and stand against our leaders who are complicit with Israel and what's happening.
Absolutely. And when it comes to, you know, women like Fadwa, Sarah, we always talk about, you know, in wars and during genocide, the people who, you know, take the burden of the pain is always women. And we've seen that, you know, in Palestine as elsewhere. Despite years of trying to fight, you know, for women's rights, why are we still here? I mean, do you think that the progress is there or it's really not there?
I think two things are happening. We're moving forward. We see millions of people on the streets for Palestine and for Gaza. We see movements coming together in a way we haven't seen for many, many years, decades. People are speaking out and are moving. Different faiths, different nationalities are coming together. At the same time, we are fighting a monster. I mean, our government ministers in the UK take money from the pro-Israel lobby. Yvette Cooper just took something like, last year had almost £250,000. And that kind of complicity is very big in this country, and that's what we're having to fight. And in the U.S., they're fighting Trump. I mean, we're dealing with very reactionary times. We're in the fight of our lives, and the only way to win is if we come together, we stand with Palestine, we call out our leaders, we stay on the streets, we apply boycott, divestment, and sanctions wherever we can. The student camps are springing up around the country. There are so many ways that people are fighting back. But we have to let the Palestinians know that we never forget and we never forgive the crimes that have been done to us. Absolutely. And to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a little more about the Western advocacy. It's very interesting because Fatwa says, you know, she has more faith in Western democracy and has seen more movements in the West as opposed to, you know, neighboring Muslim countries. Why do you think that is the case?
Well, I think it's a complicated picture because on the one hand, some of the big, massive marches have gotten coverage internationally. At the same time, practically every day there's a demonstration, an action. Things are happening on the ground that don't get reported. For example, we've been attending the International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network weekly picket for Gaza, which started back in October 2023. It's been going for nearly 100 weeks now, and it's been called together by Jewish anti-Zionists, which is very important that Jewish people speak out and call the Israeli government to account. But that pickets like that often don't get much publicity. So the two things are happening. But I would also mention places like Turkey, Yemen. There have been, on the ground, people are taking actions, but our governments are often
absolutely
on the other side. And just the last of all, recently I saw in Senegal, a group of students chased the Israeli ambassador off campus. So everywhere on the ground, people are taking many actions, but they don't get publicized. And yeah.
But there's also the reality, Sarah, I think, of the fact that in certain, you know, Gulf countries in particular, and those very, you know, close to Palestine, like Egypt, for example, you know, that we have dictators who won't allow. I mean, we've seen in Egypt, for example, how people put food, you know, in these bottles and send it across the ocean to try and alleviate a little bit of the hunger. And yet, you know, they can't, they are not allowed. It's not that people don't have the feelings, but they are not allowed to be on the streets. They are not allowed to show their support. Is that, do you see that as a major problem, that apart from the Western leadership we're fighting for, it's not just limited here? I mean, the very area surrounding Africa, we talk of Africa, you know, talk about Sudan, Congo. It's the leadership everywhere that's a problem, not just the Western one, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And the dictatorships everywhere, and often they're fueled by the West. I mean, Trump, people like Trump are fueling and encouraging dictatorships everywhere in the world. But we particularly call out the UK and the US governments because they have such a history of imperialism, of land grabs, of ethnic cleansing. I mean, my own tradition, you know, we are from the history of the Atlantic slave trade. So we know about the crimes that they've done, and they have a particular role in this, in fueling other dictatorships around the world. But you're absolutely right. The people in power are often completely opposed to those of us on the ground. And that's what we're fighting. That's what we're fighting against.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think for those of us, you know, in the UK here, sitting in London, we do have a bigger responsibility considering, apart from what you said, you know, we were the main colonizers, but also the Balfour Declaration, the whole problem in Palestine is the creation of this country.
Yes.
And we have been seeing, I think, activism and protest in unprecedented, I think, for Palestine ever. But there are also challenges to that, Sarah. What have been some of the biggest challenges we are facing in advocacy here?
I think the problems we face are the fact that this government and previous governments have been very much tied up with the pro-Israel lobby. with pro-Israel businessmen. I think something like half of the labor ministers have taken funds from those sources. So they're very tied up with the Israeli establishment, and they're backed by people like Trump. This is a major problem. I think another problem is partly what your show is addressing, the fact that the voices of women are often not prioritized. The voices of mothers don't get prioritized. Many of the grassroots movements on the ground are led by women, but very often women are invisible.
But it isn't just that, Sarah, when women do get into power, a lot of them don't act much different, do they?
Yeah, this is a problem, and we call it careerism and opportunism, that at the grassroots we build our movements, but the people who go up in the establishment become the establishment and don't represent what they should were put there to do. And one of the positive notes is there's an MP called Zara Sultana who very recently has come out and said that she's absolutely anti-Zionist. So this is a useful signal of where some politicians are moving, but there are very few like that.
But the movement has started, and you know it won't stop. And thank you, Sarah, for all the work you're doing, and thank you for being with us today.
Can I just finish by just sending a message? Our message to Palestinian people is that we won't stop. We stand with you. We won't accept the genocide. We say free Palestine. And none of us are free until Palestine is free.
Absolutely. And free it will be one day. Thank you very much. We leave you with the sounds of Palestine by the artist Saif. Goodbye.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life. A complete way, it's a complete way.
The audience of IRB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Ja'far Ja'far.
I begin in the name of Allah, the most kind, the most merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that we have these opportunities where we gather in remembrance and glorification of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. We want to continue this discussion on the subject of hypocrisy. We got to the point in this discussion where we talked about the different forms of hypocrisy. And we said that there are two main forms of hypocrisy. There is nifaq with iman, and there is nifaq in action. Today we look at the second discussion, and that is the hypocrisy of action. So the first example God gives of this type of hypocrisy is laziness and showing off. The second example of such type of hypocrites is that they will break promises to Allah, right? And so this again, it can be understood in two ways. Like the first way of understanding is that they will break direct promises. So, Ya Allah, like if you do this, I'll do this, right? Wallah, yeah, wallah. And then he does it and wallah, I don't do it. You know, I don't do it, right? Like, and this is when then you get email, Sheikh, I can't fulfill the kafara. What's the kafara for the oath, right? Like, can I tell you, like, don't make tough oaths with God. Yeah, sometimes people tell me, like, this is the oath I made. I was like, what's the oath you made? I said, I'll fast for 60 days. I was like, why? Yeah, like, why would you make that oath? Yeah, you barely fast 30 in Ramadan. Why would you ever make an oath to say 60 days or this? Relax, make a nice simple oath to God. I'll pray a 2 rakat salah. I'll fast one fast. Don't make these like prolonged oaths that are very difficult. And then you have to pay a kafara. It's not right, you know. But you made the oath, you made the oath, right? And so what we have to do is, number one, like, or the first way of understanding this is that these people make an oath to God and they break it. Allah talks about this in the Quran, in Surah Tawbah. He says, وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ آهَدَ اللَّهِ لَإِنْ آتَانَا مِنْ فَضْلِهِ لَتَصَدَّقَنَّا وَلَنَكُونَنَّا مِنَ الصَّالِحِينَ. Yeah, this is Tawbah 75 to 78. He says, and amongst them are those who made an oath to God that if you should give me more wealth, I promise you I will spend in charity. And then Allah says what? فَلَمَّا آتَاهُمْ مِنْ فَضْلِهِ بَخِلُوا بِهِ. And when I gave them, they became stingy. They didn't give any sadaqah, they didn't give any charity, they didn't do anything. And then Allah says, because they reneged on their promise, فَأَعْقَبَهُمْ نِفَاقًا فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ, that I stamped nifaq in their hearts. And subhanAllah, for breaking God's promises, right? Promises we make to God. And so this is something that we should not take lightly. If we're going to make a promise to God, and I think that we can extend this, right? Like, you know, like being a Muslim, we have already made many promises that we don't have to verbalize. You know, like being a Shia, being a Nazadar, being all of these things, I don't have to start professing one by one the laws that I'm going to follow. You understand? SubhanAllah, right? Like when I go for a driving test, I don't go through all the 300 laws and say, I promise to do this law and this law. No, I got a license, I accept all the laws. I'm a Shia, I accept all the laws. Yeah, I can't pick and choose. And when I start picking and choosing, I am breaking promises with God. Doesn't matter, I verbalized it, right? And this is why we said, with tying into that first one, it has tints of nifaq, yeah? It has hints of nifaq, smells of nifaq, and so we have to be really careful. The other way of breaking oaths with God is to do them indirectly. Indirectly meaning, for example, I pray for something, if that thing is given to me, there are expectations that are associated with that, though I may not have verbalized it. So for example, I may pray for a child, and I get a child, there is an expectation that I do my best to raise that child as a believer. And when I fail in that, I have broken my oath to God for that gift that they have given me, right? And so these are other forms of hypocrisy. I pray for rizq, there's an expectation of what to do with that rizq. So that's the second example that God gives. The third example of this type of nifaq is that they encourage others towards good, but don't engage in it themselves, right? Our first Imam, Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. He says, "Ashaddu nasi nifaqan." The most severe type of hypocrites are those man amara bitta'a wa lam ya'mal biha. They are the ones who encourage others to acts of obedience, but they themselves don't do them. وَنَهَا عَنِ الْمَعْسِيَةِ, and they prohibit wrongdoing. وَلَمْ يَنْتَهِ عَنْهَا, but they don't stop themselves, right? This is not really in the public sphere. This is more in the private sphere, you know, where externally I tell people, you know, you have to do this, brother, you have to do this. And then at home I'm like, whatever, right? Like I don't have that same level. I tell people to respect their wives, and then at home, I don't respect my wife. Like, what is the thing, right? Like, what is the hypocrisy here? And so this form of hypocrisy is something that we have to be very careful about, right? لِمَ تَقُولُونَ مَا لَا تَفْعَلُونَ. Why do you say that which you yourself don't do, right? So we have to be really careful about what we say. And this is why أَمْرَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَنَهِي عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ, one of the conditions as well is that you are doing it, yeah? Otherwise, and you are knowledgeable about it. And so this is something that Allah warns us about. It's this last area that is the extension of that third, of that second form that we talked about. That is the fourth example that we get is that we have chosen, or people have chosen, to interpret the religion based on their own understanding, right? And this is something, unfortunately, we see a lot of, right? And this is considered a form of hypocrisy, because when we accept the message, we're supposed to accept it as it came, right? And through the period of occultation, there are channels we go through to get our understanding of how to fulfill our responsibilities. It's not up to us to decide how to be obedient, right? It's not up to us to decide how we should follow, and it's even, to an extension, not up to me to follow a scholar in this manner. It's up to me to follow a marja in this matter, right? And this is where it's really important. We have tons of scholars who say many, many things. They are not my hujjah. Yeah? They are not my argument to God to say, but fulan said from the minbar that I could do this, right? And this is what, like I say to you, like when you hear things that seem odd to you, don't just buy it right away. You know, don't just accept it right away. Like, investigate a little bit. And investigate and ask the people that you have confidence in, right? Like, you go to your marja, ask them these questions. We have confidence in them about everything else. About, like, how to pray, how to fast. But when it comes to, like, random things, we rely on other people. We have to be really careful. What I want us to be real cautious about is that any time I interpret the religion, I am nearly every single time reinterpreting it because it suits my needs. Yeah, that's the only reason one would reinterpret something. It's not because the religion has progressed. It's just because, like, you know what? This is the way I like to listen. This is the way I like to dress. This is the way I like to do things, right? And so this is something that we have to realize, that the translation of that is nifaq. Yeah, that in the guise of God, this person is down the pathway of hypocrisy, where they claim to believe in me, but they choose to act the way their desires tell them to act, and they just find a way to justify it with their religion. These are just some of the signs that we have to be mindful of. As I said, this one and the next lecture are a bit more sensitive, because it talks about things that we may encounter on a day-to-day basis, and more than anything, we may ourselves be going through it in our lives, and the hypocrisy that we find ourselves in.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Ali. It's so hard for an innocent angel to breathe on the earth far from heaven. But for my angel, it was much harder.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Keep listening for more wonderful programs right here on Iran Radio from our station in Tehran, Iran. First, we present Youth Station. This program series addresses various topics which are all related to young people, such as youth and contentment, youth and abstinence, youth and friendship, and a lot more. Valuable insights for the younger generation, indeed. Then you'll listen to another selection from our radio productions. Our next offering is Viewpoints. Brother Atta and Sayyid Ali Mereshi will lead an analytical roundtable discussion of various religious, political, cultural, and social issues of the Islamic world today. In this program, we pay particular attention to the mainstream news of the Islamic issues and Muslim lands. Thought-provoking discussions from Viewpoints. Following that, we bring you The Key, hosted by Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha. This program presents short answers to doubts and ambiguities raised about the various Islamic and Shia topics, so don't miss a bit. Coming up, it's time for Youth Station.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamati. Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a very new episode of Youth Station. Well, this is me, Asma. Once more, I have the honor to be at your service I have with me...
Brother Ali at your service, like always.
Yes, thank you for being here.
They would say, never is too late, or time flies. Mm-hmm. Do you really believe in that?
Well, I don't have to believe in it. It's something factual, so much of real.
Because some people really want to pursue time, and they just want to do everything. They worry about time and losing the time as a concept, real mm-hmm. concept in their life, so they cannot enjoy the moment.
Yeah, they cannot enjoy the moment, but time flies so fast. Even we have it, of course, there are many narrations about this topic, but then Imam Ali alayhi salam says that if you do not seize the moments as a given opportunity to you, then you would regret it. So to take care of time as something that is a blessing and has been given to you as a gift, and you have to take care of it, and mm-hmm. you have to make the best out of it, it's something so real. Again, we have this concept of moderation.
Yeah.
For everything, you have to consider moderation. Like, even in this concept, okay, time is so important to me, but not to the point that I forget the quality of what I'm doing in mm-hmm. this time.
Mm-hmm.
Many people rush into getting a new job. You know, you feel as if they're in a pace.
Exactly.
As if it's competition. And then they want to finish their study, get to university, get the best job, have a good income, then build a family, then have children. And then we come up with this question, so what? If you do not actually care about the quality of your
yes.
life. If you just do because you have to do it at a certain age or mm-hmm. at a certain phase of your life. If you're a person like this, I guess you definitely have to have an overview upon what you have been doing up until now.
If a person didn't use his or her time to achieve some sort of, I don't know, achievement,
mm-hmm.
Would he get the chance again to make it up for what he has lost? Do you believe in that?
See, there's something like opportunities are given to you as a gift. You can't seize them. You have two ways. There's no way other than that. You have mm-hmm. to seize it or you just ignore it.
Yeah.
Once you seize it, okay, good for you. But once you have forgotten about that, have ignored it, then I guess the best is for you not to think about it.
But it's not like easy. Like Chris, opportunity, the concept of opportunity, as Imam Ali in one of the narrations says, Al-Fursatu Tamurru Marra Sahab.
Exactly, yeah.
Which opportunity passes like the cloud. So take advantage of good opportunities. I mean, it's not all the time easy to detect what is an opportunity for me
mm-hmm.
or what is. I mean, sometimes we are so
engaged with the details.
Or neglectful of
yeah.
that is an opportunity to officially address something as an opportunity for yourself. So, I mean, how can you be all the time, be aware, be noticed sharply that this is an opportunity for me. I have to take it. It's the moment for me. Sometimes we are waiting for a white knight. Sometimes we are waiting that a white knight comes and save us from our miserable life a boring life. We are waiting a force out there comes and give us or lead us.
I guess that's natural in all the human beings. Like, we all feel that someday, even if it's not about someone else, an unknown stranger coming to me, changing
yeah.
all my life upside down, and then knowing all the answers to my mysterious questions
mm-hmm.
out of nowhere.
Yes.
Out of the blue. I guess there is such a thing in all of us, but then a part of us knows what the truth is.
Mm-hmm.
So we all know, and based on what God has said in his book, in the Holy Book of Quran, we have it that us human beings have given the knowledge of both, the
yes.
truth and the wrong,
mm-hmm.
and the false. So we already know what is false, what is right. And I do believe that about the opportunities, we also know
mm-hmm.
that this is my one and only opportunity.
Yeah.
If I take it, it would change my life. If I don't, again, it would change my life. So it's just a matter of courage, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The matter of courage and being brave in order to just seize the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Some people would know. They're fully aware of the fact that, okay, this is my life's chance. This is my life's opportunity. This is the matter of life and death. If I take it, then I would turn into this different person entirely. But then I have seen examples of these people. Mm-hmm. They're not brave enough to just get into the heart of those. Because, you know, even for those opportunities, you have to do some efforts. It's not going to be so easy and peachy. Mm-hmm. No, you have to go through too much of hardships. Then many people are not brave enough. They're not courageous enough to get into that much of hardship.
And sometimes some people are just picky and they say, what if there would be another option? A better option for me.
I guess if they're picky and they know what they're doing, then they would know the percentage of a better chance to come to them. Or maybe you can just, you know, you can use both chances, the one that you're waiting for and the one that has already been given to you. But generally speaking, I think it's much more logical to think about what is in hand.
Or maybe they're just not, as you said, they're not just courage enough. They are not just brave enough to just...
embrace the situation.
Embrace the ramification.
Exactly. So for chances and opportunities, I guess they do exist for every single person. Because it's impossible for you not to have the slightest... at least trace of opportunity or chance in your life. But then it depends on you many mm-hmm. times, at least, if we look at it so realistically. It depends on you, how you look at things, how you define opportunity, and how you react when an opportunity is given to you. Right now, there is an opportunity for us to go and have a sip of water. So why not? Oh, let's go for a break and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Yeah, there are many people who believe that it's never too late. Huh. I would stand in the middle and say, yes, sometimes it's never too late, but sometimes, no, it's a big lie. It's too late.
Can I agree more? Definitely. Yeah. I mean... sometimes life doesn't give you a second chance in some cases. So you have to seize the moment and opportunity, as you said. But sometimes if you miss, for any reason you can imagine, if you miss some opportunity, you cannot just go, I don't know, find a corner mm-hmm. and just feel you are the most miserable person in the world.
Exactly.
Maybe you can take it as a lesson and find and wait for the next moment. Maybe you can just take it as a lesson, as I said, and next moment would be even a better opportunity. Maybe it was just a test.
Yeah. Well,
brought upon you by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to just make you mm-hmm. more mature, feel more mature.
Yeah, feel more mature and be ready enough to take this blessing as a blessing, because sometimes the blessing is given to you, but you take it for granted. Mm-hmm. But then, if that thing is given to you in another age, maybe what you're going to feel is that, okay, I am blessed. So you're going to just appreciate it more. So there's always the chance for you to have some better stuff, but then you would always have that trigger inside of you that reminds you of the thing that you wanted, but you didn't get at the right time. Mm-hmm. So this would remain there.
Exactly.
I don't deny it.
And when it comes to time and make the best of our time, sometimes it's not just about attaining or, I don't know, achieving something. Sometimes
exactly.
it's about, imagine when you said something, you know, bad to your friend, or you didn't have an issue mm-hmm. with your friend and you want to make it up for her or him. Sometimes we just, you know, postpone it to the time that we find the, you know, as we say, proper moment.
But that proper moment would never come.
Never come.
Yeah.
And then you regretted, oh, I should have, it was an easy job. I should have done it before. I should have said sorry or whatever. Sometimes it's not just about something concrete, something tangible. It's about relationships. Or, for example, saying sorry to a person or, you know.
Oh, to your parents, of course. As youngsters, sometimes you're not in the mood to take words in, to digest words that are given to you. Well, I don't want to get into that discussion of, okay, parents also have got to follow some rules in advising you or in giving pieces of advice or instructing you even. Now, put that aside, but then what's on you, what's related to your share is that you should have this always in mind, that the blissful moment that you have with your family, with your friends, with the dear ones are not going to be there forever.
Yes.
So there is one day that, of course, would come, and then you would just regret it. And the only thing you could do at that time is a sigh, a deep sigh from the depth of your heart.
Definitely.
So don't let that moment happen to you. Whenever you wish, like telling them how much you love them, do not hesitate. Just go and say it.
Sometimes we feel like too much of proud, like we feel we are really proud of ourselves, so we don't want to, I don't know, say sorry or admit or acknowledge what you have done.
Exactly. And sometimes I won't say it's about, you see, it's not pride sometimes even. It's the matter of, okay, you would say, okay, she's there. My mom is going to be always there.
Yeah.
My dad is going to be always there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have the slightest clue about a future without them.
Yes.
That's why I take them for granted, which is actually the worst thing I would do to myself, because life is all about the beautiful moments you create for yourself, not you wait for them to be created for you. So if there's anything in your mind you want to create as a memory with you and your friends, with your family, go for it.
So what is the reason that some of us, we don't do it at a proper time? Is it because we think they are always there for us? Or is it because we feel that if we say sorry, we put ourselves in danger somehow?
Of course, both. Because many of us have got that pride that is so hard to be swallowed. So that's one part of the story. But the other part, which to me is so much more important, and I guess this is this is what many of the cases are. I guess it's because we take it for granted.
Definitely.
We don't imagine a day without these dear ones. That's why we say, okay, I don't have to tell him or her how sorry I am. I don't have to tell them how much I love them. They already know that. While we forget about this fact that the more you tell your dear ones you love them, it's going to be actually adding to the quality of your relationships. And
yes,
then it would open many new doors in your life.
I guess, unfortunately, for some of us, we should lose at certain points till we appreciate that moment or that, you know, lost opportunity or...
So take the moments and seize them before it's too late. Yes, there is this notion that says it's never too late, but if you don't believe in it, then today I have to proclaim and I have to officially announce that there is the other side of the coin, which is it is too late. So don't let that be your eternal motto, that it was too late for me. If there's anything you want to do, just go for it. Get into the heart of whatever you want to do. And that way you're going to save all the miserable, regretful things that you would say to yourself at the back of your mind. So this was all. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings, be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ya Latif,
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif.
A diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
We all know the Walt Disney trademark, a company that has been able to find its way into countries and cultures with its animations. A 100-year-old company whose animation production is only a small part of its activities. Now Walt Disney owns many theme parks, news networks, film companies, and small businesses. Famous businesses like Baby Einstein Company. Walt Disney produces toys and multimedia products through this company. Products for children from 3 months to 3 years old. These productions are supposed to promote children's interactive activities, creating a sense of curiosity through art, classical music, and poetry is the output of this company. Products that are not going to turn children into Einsteins of the future, but are popular with parents. Parents who are customers of other products in addition to these ones. The book section of Amazon is one of the most popular sections for parents. A section with about 60,000 books on raising children. The titles of these books often begin with the word how. Books that are supposed to help how to raise children, from teaching new ways of behavior to new ways to observe health and academic matters. Of course, these books are popular, but the products related to raising children are not limited to them. Buggy Bag is the newest and strangest product in this field. Parents put their child in the buggy bag to go to the store. These bags prevent the virus and bacteria in the shopping cart from spreading to the child. Strange products like buggy bags are not rare these days. In the store, you can find products related to children as far as the eye can see. A lot of play equipment to educational and health equipment. Parents buy these products and then fill their virtual pages with pictures of their children. The child with his toys is only part of the story. Sports at a young age, speaking in other languages, and any kind of activity that differentiates the child from others are popular with parents. They are willing to pay for any product related to education. a situation that looks like a profitable industry for several years. An industry called parenting.
You know, I didn't set out to be a parenting expert. In fact, I'm not very interested in parenting per se. It's just that there's a certain style of parenting these days that is kind of messing up.